runs or less in six of their last eight after last night. Boy, I thought for sure two. Two against Bartolo Colon in the first inning. He threw like 30 pitches in the first inning, and you just thought, okay, here you go. They're not gonna fool around with this.
They wrecked him the last time out.
Yep, they're gonna get to this guy. They're gonna put up some runs. They're gonna keep their foot on the gas. And instead, they got one more. David Peralta RBI single a little bit later on in the game, and that was it. The offense just. I mean, I lost track of how many 1-2-3 innings they had yesterday against the Rangers.
They're not tacking on the runs. They're just not. I mentioned it to Lobello. I mean, you know, it started with Arrieta, eight innings, no runs. Pivetta, six innings, no runs. Di Sclafani, seven innings, no runs. Matt Harvey, seven innings, two runs. I mean, it's just not scoring any runs. I mean, we could talk all we want and complain about Archie Bradley and the bullpen. And I mean, you got to score some runs. You got an offense, score some runs.
Yeah.
I mean, I asked Lobello about moving Goldschmidt out of the two spot. I mean, he's on pace for, you know, like 85 RBIs. He's not driving in the runs that we're accustomed to. And he said, you know, stay tuned. Something could be happening.
Stay tuned. Absolutely. Like I said, I'm always examining things, and I'm having great baseball discussions as we speak with Jared Porter, who's our general manager in Texas right now. So, yeah, we are considering some things, not drastic, just maybe little pokes in the arm. You know, when you can do whatever you possibly can to get things kick-started, we're trying to examine things the best we possibly can to add lineup continuity, not do wholesale changes where the guys come to the ballpark the next day and think you picked the lineup out of a hat. But we want to make sure that we're maximizing our potential to score runs and win games.
I remember when they had somebody did pick a lineup out of a hat once. Was it Joe Maddon?
It was Joe Maddon who used 867-5309. Jenny.
We talked about the offensive slumps in the beginning of the season. We talked about whether Dave Magadan was at fault. Should they change the hitting coach? Because they're really struggling offensively. And then they kind of got into gear and they were going. And now, like at the worst time ever, they're hitting this funk where they just can't score runs.
Yeah.
Like literally the worst time. I mean, it's the middle of August. You're in the midst of a playoff race, and your offense is missing in action right now.
And the thing that's most maddening about it is that right now they are excuseless when it comes to their offense. Everybody's available. I mean, unless you want to count Jerod Dyson, right? I mean, A.J. Pollock is healthy. Steven Souza is healthy. Jake Lamb's not in there, but you got an upgrade in Eduardo Escobar, who is healthy and contributing. Ketel Marte, Nick, I mean, everybody. You've got... just about every weapon at your disposal if you're Torey Lovello. This is, you know, I could buy it back in May when you were missing guys. Okay, I could buy it back in May when you were trying to patch together a lineup every night and you were, you know, Jerod Dyson was out in your outfield every evening. Okay, that's not the case anymore. You've got your full complement of offensive weapons and you're still struggling with the runs. Now, Torey Lovello, he's searching for the answers too.
I'm not going to lie. I think when we were sitting down in the offseason, we were going over the strengths and limitations of our team and where the improvements needed to happen. Our offense was definitely not one of them. And at times it does leave me scratching my head, and I don't know exactly why or how things are happening.
Look, you pointed it out earlier, and it's the truth. They got off to a 24-12 start. Since then, 36 games into the season, they've been a 500 team. They've been a 500 team for the better part of the last
43 or something like that. I mean, that's what they are.
For the better part of the last 90 games, they have been, in essence, a 500 baseball team. And if that trend continues, they're going to end up with 87 wins. All right? If you say 24-12,
okay,
and then 500 ball the rest of the way, you end up at 87-75. I don't know if that's going to be good enough or not. I have no idea. But that feels like where we're trending. Great start, 24-12, 500 baseball the rest of the season. I don't know if that's going to be good enough.
How many games have they played so far? Do you know?
I can tell you real quick. They have played 120. They have 42 games left.
So 120, and they were 24-12.
Yeah.
So that's 36. So 10, 14, and 84. Yeah, and 84 games, they're two games under 500.
Yeah.
The 24, they're living off of what they did at 24-12.
No doubt.
You know, they're living off of the fact that they got off to that really good start. And that's it. Like, that's what they have. And other than that, they've been a really average baseball team that, you know, has highs
and
has lows.
That's the word for it.
They're an average baseball team.
They've been an average baseball team. They've been an average baseball team roughly since the second week of May. give or take, the first week of May. They've basically been an average baseball team. And this meeting,
it's like ASU basketball. Remember they got off to that great start?
Yes. Yes.
And then they played like barely 500 basketball the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was ASU like? 13-0?
12-0, I believe.
12-0?
I believe they're
12-0. 12-0, and then what happened the rest of the way? They were an average basketball team.
500 basketball team.
I kind of feel like the Diamondbacks are like ASU basketball. They got off to a great start, and now they're just average.
It was really interesting hearing Troy Lovello not talk about this team meeting the other night. It's very clear.
Oh, we hammered him on it.
It's very clear. No, I know we did. He does not want word of these things getting out.
I think everybody wants me to get on the top rope and find out about when and how that's happening when I'm got these guys in a suplex and I'm thrown down with them. You know, that's happened. I'm not going to lie. It definitely has happened this year. And the fact that it doesn't really get out is what's more important to me than anything, because the things we got to take care of in here should stay in here.
Which leads me to believe, and I'm going to editorialize here for a second,
yeah,
that Archie Bradley committed a major Troy Lovello no-no by telling the media about a closed-door team meeting on Saturday night. Robbie Ray didn't want to touch it. Robbie Ray knew the rule. Rule number one, you don't talk about Fight Club. Rule number two, you do not talk about Fight Club. Archie Bradley apparently was not aware of the rules when Troy Lovello is having meetings. When Troy Lovello is called, because Archie Bradley, Troy, when he's our leader, man, we gather around the fire and we listen to him.
Maybe Archie was just mad that he wanted him to throw knuckleballs the other day because Lovello kind of mentioned, you know, he kind of got on Archie
But did you get that impression that
I just
does not want this getting out, and Archie specifically said there was a meeting and that had to rub Torrey the wrong way. He doesn't want this stuff getting out.
Who cares? I mean, here's the thing, Torrey, who cares? Nobody cares. You had a team meeting. You should. You lost 2 in a row to Cincinnati. If you didn't have a team meeting, I would think you were stupid. You lost 2 games in a row to the Reds. Do you know how bad the Reds are? You lost 2 in a row. You got beat by DeSclafani and Harvey. I mean, come on, man. You should have had a team meeting. The fact that it's out again, it's like these world secrets, these trade secrets,
espionage. That's right. The IMF and the CIA and the FBI. I mean, look, if you don't want to
leaks or whatever it was called,
if you don't want to tell me what was said in the meeting, that's fine. I don't care about that. I mean, that's your business. But it's not, you know, to hide the fact that you even had one does feel a little.
It's out. We had a meeting. Yeah, we needed to address some concerns. All right, done. Over. Nobody cares. You know, the more you try to cover it up and hide it, the worse it actually gets. You're better off just admitting we had a team meeting. We just lost 2 in a row to the Reds. We wanted to address some issues. Done. Okay, great. Perfect. No problem. Move on.
It's Ticket Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. We'll be giving away tickets to the D-back series against the Angels next week. Listen at 4:15 in the afternoon for your chance to win. Thanks to his contract situation, many wondered if he was going to play at all. But now David Johnson might get more preseason work than we all believed. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Real quick note for the NFL.
Roger Goodell is retired. Been fired.
No. Don't you think if that were happening, we'd have like this breaking news sounder that we'd probably play?
That is amazing.
When I say the words real quick note from the NFL, don't you think if it were something like that maybe, just maybe, we'd have some bells and whistles going off around here?
I'm fascinated by all the problems in the NFL. And nobody's like, hey, like the commissioner, like the guy's in charge. Like, there's always something wrong with the NFL.
Well,
and yet nobody ever points to the guy making $40 million a year.
This is not it. Ian Rappaport is reporting the veteran free agent cornerback Orlando Scandrick, released by the Redskins today, is already drawing significant interest on the market.
Not from the Cardinals.
Source said the Chiefs are the first team to bring him in for a visit. Not the Cardinals, you say?
Nah, they just look at him as a nickelback. They don't think of him anything more as a nickel, and he's going to want to get paid. So the Cardinals don't have any interest in Orlando Scandrick. Nickel guy only at this point in his career is the information I'm getting. So he would not be a fit here for the Cardinals. So no interest in Orlando Scandrick.
All right. David Johnson, there is a lot of interest in him when it comes to the Arizona Cardinals for what he can do this year. And Steve Wilks, the head coach of the Cardinals, they practiced outside this morning, but yesterday Wilks had said that David Johnson might be in line to get a little more playing time this preseason.
Well, I still think it's important because you got to look at David in play. last year, you know. And then you look at the timing. When I talk about play, we know he went out that first game. Also the timing and things throughout OTAs and minicamp, and we know he missed a few days there for whatever reasons. But I think it's important that he plays quite a bit, you know, and get into a rhythm. And when I say quite a bit, it's up to my standards. You know what I'm saying? You know, three quarters, four quarters, those kind of things. But we have set numbers that we give each guy as we progress to preseason number two and three.
I thought that was interesting. What does quite a bit mean for David Johnson in three meaningless games when he's missed all of last season, basically? Do you really need to play David Johnson, quote-unquote, quite a bit during the preseason?
Two carries in the first time wasn't quite a bit.
No,
two carries in the first game.
So
two carries, you're out. Right? Two carries,
yeah.
You're out.
Now,
that's not quite a bit.
Now, somebody pointed out that if you give him four carries against the Saints on Friday,
You've doubled the
which could be, by definition, quite a bit. Well, we gave him quite a bit more. We doubled it, right? Oh, yeah, you went from two to four. Whoop-de-doo. You know, I don't know. I don't know what quite a bit is for David Johnson. I do know this. There's a story on AZ Central in which he thinks that the offense is more than a one-man show. I think the biggest thing is letting everyone else know that not just that I'm back, but our offense is stacked. Our front line, the receivers are stacked, and the quarterback is doing good, close quote.
I think the quarterback play is something that we'll see develop over the next few weeks. And just to, you know, Bradford's going to obviously play more, and that's, everybody's so focused on Rosen. But let's be honest. I mean, Rosen might not play for a while.
Right.
So this is just reps for Rosen. This is just practice for Rosen. This is just, you know, getting your feet wet, man. Here it is. Here's what it's like to face an NFL pass rush. Here's what it's like to have a second string offensive line unit blocking for you. You get your head knocked off. You know, it's just, you know, for him, it's just about, you know, getting reps, getting your feet wet. The most important thing, honestly, which we don't talk about enough, is just working Bradford up and getting him ready and trying to get a rapport with the wide receivers. They brought in a wide receiver today, which I thought was pretty interesting, a kid from Akron. Now, I don't, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what does it mean? Anybody you're bringing in now, unless he's like an 8-year veteran, I don't think it's going to, you know, it's going to mean anything.
Austin Wolf, 6'3", 190, was the guy they signed. They released wide receiver Rashad Ross today to make that move.
Yeah, I wouldn't classify anybody you're bringing in who's got no experience as a good player, okay? So, you know, they're just, you know, trying to get another body in there and trying to create competition at the position because some guys haven't established themselves. But the quarterback play that he's talking about is interesting because I do really think we've got to, eventually you've got to ramp this up and start turning your attention away from Josh Rosen and more towards Sam Bradford.
Well, and at some point in time we will. I think the closer we get to the regular season, as long as Bradford stays healthy, then that attention will shift a little bit. I agree with that. It's hard for me at this point. You know, other than Fitz, other than David Johnson, it's hard for me to look at this offense and say it's stacked, you know, and that they're going to put up a bunch of points and that they're going to move the ball in giant chunks. It's hard to say that with the uncertainty at the wide receiver position, with the uncertainty at the tight end position. It's hard to believe that if you look at this Cardinals offense, stacked is not exactly the word I would use to describe it.
The way I see it right now, because I do think the wide receivers is a major problem. And I've said all along, the only guy I see that's going to be on this roster in 3 years that are wide receivers is probably Christian Kirk. I mean, that's it. Do I see Little being here? No. Do I see Sherfield being here or Fitz being here? From 3 years from now, I don't think Fitz is going to be here. I don't think J.J. Nelson is going to be here. I think J.J. Nelson could be gone this year. So the only guy going forward, I think, is Kirk. So I do think that the weapons are, I think the number one weapon is a combo of Fitz and David Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your two. And I think the next best weapon they have, honestly, is Ricky Seals-Jones. I think he's your next. So your top three weapons to me, in no particular order, David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Ricky Seals-Jones. I think the wide receivers come into play a little bit later.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be one of those teams that don't have a lot of receptions and a lot of touchdowns out of their wide receivers.
Here's Sam Bradford today talking about David Johnson, says he might honestly be our best route runner.
I mean, he's pretty impressive. You know, today at practice, you know, just watching him run routes, you know, I think he might be one of our best route runners, regardless of position. I mean, he's just so smooth. you know, he's so versatile as a running back that there's so many different things that you can do with him. But, you know, obviously last week, you know, watching him take the first two carries for 14 yards, I mean, that's what he's best at. You know, we just got to find ways to give him opportunities to make plays like that.
And here's more Wilkes talking about David Johnson's run.
Started up front, you know, it was a couple of plays that I showed this morning as we recapped the game. And it was a great job with the offensive line coming off the ball, getting to the second level, and tremendous job on the outside with Larry coming in, blocking the support player, the safety. So all 11 guys working together, you know. You saw Coleman going in there and, you know, did a great job for us just making contact on the linebacker. So, again, it's encouraging.
I guess to put a bow on it for me, Gambo, I'm really curious to see with three preseason games to go, and let's be honest, basically two. Nobody counts that fourth one. I'm be curious to see what quite a bit looks like for David Johnson, because I think this offense is predicated on his availability and his production. And without it, I'm not sure, other than Fitz, where it's going to come from.
You want to keep him healthy?
Just be careful.
You want to limit him?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. The two carries that he got on Saturday, was
good.
Plenty.
Thanks.
More than enough. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks.
Get
the showers.
Put some shorts and a t-shirt on.
Yeah, we'll see you after the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm desperate to see much more than that out of David Johnson. And I'm surprised to hear Steve Wilkes talk about needing to get him more than that in these preseason games. I don't know if you need much more than that out of David Johnson. I really don't. There's a lot of this offense that is wrapped up into him and him alone.
I probably agree with you more than I would. Yeah, I'm going to get him reps, but what, were we talking about playing him a half of a game?
Right.
I mean, I don't think you're going to play him half a game.
What's quite a bit? And that's what
quite a bit. So now he's going to play
quite a
full quarter? Okay, full quarter? What's that, two, three series?
He didn't even play a full series on Saturday night.
Two carries, in and out.
And that was done. Yeah. He didn't even finish the series. Chase Edmonds finished it up.
Look, I think they're excited about the offensive line. I think
they're sitting on something.
Didn't Mike Iupati grade out as the best offensive lineman in the preseason in week one?
Yes, he did. I think 93.
I think they're, and he's a great run blocker.
Yeah.
So I think they're excited about their ability to just maul people and run the football.
Real quick one, Bryce Butler did not practice today.
He had a little, you know, a little soreness right there with his foot, and we wanted to keep him out today and just have him an opportunity to have a little bit of recovery so he can try to be ready for the game.
And Dayone and Josh Bynes are still out.
Buck is still out as well as Josh Bynes, so I'm still waiting on the word and when the doctor's going to release those guys. But, you know, we got to continue to move forward and try to get the other guys ready.
A couple of injuries to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, somebody's got to establish himself from the wide receiver spot. You know, they do. Somebody's got to establish himself. Yeah. Somebody's got to step up and be the guy.
It was supposed to be the stake into the heart of the rest of the National League West. In reality, it has not anything. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Memory serves on the day the LA Dodgers got Manny Machado. The collective groan from Phoenix, Arizona, could probably be heard all the way in Albuquerque, New Mexico,
sure,
and Denver, Colorado.
Oh, the overreaction. Oh, the Dodgers just won the NL West. At the time, you're like, oh, my God, that really sucks. They just got the second best player in baseball.
At the time, it kind of felt like they did just win the NL West. At the time,
They traded five prospects to go get Manny Machado, and you did. It felt like it was going to put them over the top.
Felt like that was it. They're 11-13
crazy
since acquiring Manny Machado.
Absolutely great. Let me tell you something. If anybody was following me on Twitter, I was live tweeting the game last night, enjoying every second of it. The fact that they just imploded. Alexander imploded. They had to bring Baez in, and the Giants just rallied with four runs in the ninth. Kershaw pitched a gem. But listen, there's no question Machado's struggling. I mean, he was the biggest prize of the trade deadline. He's been a complete disappointment. He's batting 250. His OPS, and I know you're down with OPS.
I am down with OPS.
733. He's got five RBIs.
Yeah, you know me.
He's played in 24 games. I know you. He's got five ribbies in 24 games.
Yeah.
Like, he is, and Matt Kemp, who was killing it, like, Matt Kemp looked like he was Matt Kemp again. Well, now he's looking like the Matt Kemp from the last guy. He's three for his last 51.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something right now, but I did.
You saw that coming?
I saw that one coming.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Country mile away. I mean, right. I looked at him and I thought, there's no way he's going to keep up.
You didn't. The fountain of youth is not going to last forever.
No way he's going to keep that up. So I am not surprised at all that he is three for his last 51.
But are you surprised Manny Machado's got five ribbies in 24 games?
I am.
And what
surprised
the hell? Didn't you used to be Manny Machado?
Yeah.
Remember you. You were like the second best player in baseball. Where'd that guy go? I'm happy he hasn't shown up, but I mean, it's got. I'm the Dodgers. I gave up five prospects for you. You got to play better. Like, I might have a meeting with him. Dude, like, we gave up a lot to get you. Can you drive in a run? Can you hit a homer?
Here's the problem.
Can you do something, anything?
You were live tweeting that game last night, and this is what makes what's going on with the Diamondbacks right now so frustrating, and this 1-3 road trip they're off to so far so frustrating, because the Dodgers are holding that door open. I'm worried we're going to get to the end of the season, and the Diamondbacks, we're going to realize their best chance to give themselves the opportunity to win this division, they're going to squander it, and it's right here, right now. And they're going to squander it right here, right now, because they're not taking advantage of what's going on with the LA Dodgers.
I think that's a song right here, right now.
It is,
right here,
fact.
Right now.
The point about Machado is this, is that no matter how mediocre he's been since the deal, he and the rest of them are having a hard time overcoming a bullpen that you were live tweeting about last night. Their ERA in August, the Dodgers bullpen ERA in August, 7.15. Hideous.
Yeah. I'm surprised
horrible.
It's not higher. I'm surprised it's not. They've blown like the last four games.
Yep.
Like their bullpen is. So if they had taken care of business, the Dodgers could be taking advantage of this Diamondback slump that they're in right now, and the Dodgers could be three up.
Sure.
I mean, do you get the feeling that whoever gets to four games up wins this thing?
Whoever gets to up by four
and you win it. I mean, because that might be an insurmountable lead the way these teams are playing.
Yeah. They lost the lead in the seventh inning on August 10th against the Rockies. Scott Alexander gave up that walk-off three-run
shot. That was the guy last night.
On August 11th.
The lefty, Scott Alexander.
Dylan Florio issued a walk-off walk against Colorado on the 12th. And there was what happened last night against San Francisco. Alexander, the guy who's taken over for Kenley Jansen, has allowed runs in four of his last eight games. He's rocking an ERA of 9.45. Now, we know this is going on with Archie, but at least the good news for the Diamondbacks is that in their bullpen, right now he's the only one.
Yeah.
They got other guys they can turn. Right now, everybody in that Dodgers bullpen is screwing this up, and they too, Gambo, are having a hard time scoring runs. I looked at this. The Dodgers have lost four straight, five of their last six. They scored 21 runs against the Brewers on August 2nd. Since then, 1, 0, 3, 4, 2, 8, 4, 2, 3, 2.
That's the Dodgers?
Dodgers.
Ugh.
29 runs in 10 games.
Ugh.
I mean, so they're the same stuff that's plaguing the Diamondbacks. The same issues they're going through. The Dodgers are going through them, and in some ways, it's worse than what the Diamondbacks
are going
through.
You're going to get such a kick out of this. So I'm watching the game last night, and I'm literally live tweeting it as the ninth inning's happening. I'm like literally tweeting everything out. So Alexander gets taken out of the game, and they're booing him. Boo! Boo! You suck! Boo! Boo! And then he gets to the dugout, and Baez comes in. Boo! Boo! You suck too! I mean, it was like, I've never seen anything like that. They booed the guy that left, and then they booed the guy that came in.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Usually you're at least happy to see the guy come in. No, you were unhappy to see him too.
They were booing both guys. They booed the guy that was leaving. They booed the guy that was coming in. And meanwhile, your ownership, your management went out and got Manny Machado, but they forgot to go get somebody who can help you in the bullpen. My God, it was great. It was great. It was great.
Dave Roberts says, look, this bullpen's trying their best.
They're going out there and they're doing the best they can. And they're trying to make pitches. They're in uncharted territory. So, unfortunately, we didn't get it done tonight.
And express sympathy for Clayton Kershaw and the fact that he deserved a win last night.
He had great stuff and really pitched. He deserved to get the win. It was fun to watch him compete, make pitches. Get out of a couple spots. That eighth inning was huge. Pushed him a little bit. Made a great play to finish his outing. So I can't say enough about what Clayton did for us tonight.
So Alexander pitched two-thirds of an inning. And in his two-thirds of an inning, he gave up as many hits as Kershaw did in eight. I'm telling you, it's a comedy. It's so fun to watch the Dodgers implode. I enjoy it.
A phrase that I want to use, but I can't because we're on the radio. I think that phrase starts with an expletive and ends with the word show. Right now, that Dodgers bullpen is a
circus show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is a circus show, is what it is. And it might look. It might get better.
The show goes on.
Kenley Jansen, while the Diamondbacks go into tonight's game with a one-game lead over L.A. and now a one-game lead over Colorado. So the Colorado Rockies are a game behind. So are the Dodgers from the D-backs. Kenley Jansen said yesterday he expects to be able to return sooner than had been feared. Now, I haven't seen a timetable on that,
Denver.
But apparently Kenley Jansen will not require treatment that would have kept him on the shelf for 4 to 6 weeks. So he could be back a lot sooner. But for the Dodgers,
can he come back now? The Dodgers are saying, like, today?
Here's the bad news. Brian Dozier is being monitored after being pulled from last night's game. Apparently his EKG results showed some kind of abnormality in his heartbeat. What that means, we don't know, but it's obviously concerning for a guy who's only 31 years of age. And then there's this, not that he's been any good, but John Axford, who was the one bullpen arm they did get at the deadline, he's done for the season. He's got a fractured fibula. I'm sorry, he's not done for the season. It's only expected to keep him down for 2 to 3 weeks. That surprised me with a fractured fibula. Yeah, so he'll be back at some point. Not that he's been any good, but they're going to be without him, too. They've moved starters to the bullpen to try to fortify it.
Ken Mayade is going to become the closer, I think. My favorite part about last night's game was somebody asked Bruce Bochy after the game, a reporter, do you feel sorry for the Dodgers that they don't have their reliever, Kenley Jansen?
I'm sure Boch probably looked at the guy like he was a Martian.
He went
from outer space.
So
what did you just ask me?
Bochy went, excuse me? do you not understand? Like, it doesn't matter if the Giants are 40 games out. They want to beat the Dodgers' ass more than anything, okay?
Yeah.
They want to beat, they hate the Dodgers more than we do, okay? More than we do. They hate the Dodgers. They do. They hate them more than we do. They both were in New York. They both moved to California. They hate each other. Doesn't matter. The Giants are always going to want to beat the Dodgers' ass. You have to see how happy that dugout was yesterday when Hundley came up with a big pinch hit two-run single to give them the lead. They were going crazy. They were going berserk.
Andy points out that Dozier is leading off tonight, so apparently he's okay.
Okay.
Even though he had the funky EKG, apparently he's in the lineup tonight, and he is leading off tonight for the LA Dodgers. Diamondbacks go into action tonight against the Rangers with a one-game lead over both LA and Colorado's got the Astros tonight too, right? They were off last night.
Yes.
They have the Astros tonight.
They got Verlander tonight.
Scoreboard watching.
They got Verlander.
It is Ticket Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. We will be giving away tickets to the D-back series against the Angels next week. Listen at 4:15 this afternoon for your opportunity to win. Under Todd Graham, it became one of the worst units in all of college football. Under Herm Edwards, predictions are being made for a complete reversal. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. When it comes to the upcoming ASU football season, I have not one, but two predictions in my hand. And it is up to the audience of the Burns and Gambo Show and Gambo himself to tell me which of these predictions he finds to be the most outrageous.
Outrageous,
egregious,
okay.
Preposterous. Which of the two will... Okay, here's number one. Here's prediction number one. This is from Karan Crump of ASU.
Okay?
You ready for this?
I'm ready. Hold on, I'm ready.
Stand by.
I got to sit down, okay.
Here comes Karan Crump's prediction for ASU's defense in 3, 2, and 1.
It's going to be top five. Top five defense. Top five. Top 10, top five. Hey, we're going to get it done this year.
Okay.
A chance to be a top five defense in the Pac-12 South? I think they could. A legitimate shot to be a top five defense in the Pac-12 South.
I'm laughing so hard I'm starting to see spots.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, that's what I got.
How many teams in the Pac-12 South? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6! Yeah, all right. Simple math shows that's nuts.
Listen, I like Danny Gonzalez, man. Danny! Defensive coordinator from San Diego State University. I believe in you, my friend. But you're not going to be a top five defense.
Top five defense. And considering that the Sun Devils lost their safety, Tyler Wiley, who was taking first team reps in what's called the Tillman position in this 3-3-5 defensive scheme that Danny Gonzalez, the new defensive coordinator, runs, the 3-3-5. They lost Tyler Wiley for the entire season with a foot injury that he suffered in the team scrimmage over the weekend. But that didn't stop Karan Crump from saying top five defense. We're going to be a top five defense. All right, so that's prediction number one.
He meant it in nation.
I believe.
In the country.
Yes, he meant.
He meant in the country.
The country.
Top five in the country.
Top five in the country is what he meant, all right?
Wow.
Here's wacky ASU prediction number two. You prepared? You sitting down for this? Here you go.
All right.
This is from Athlon, one of those publications Athlon. That does like the preseason predictions, right? The magazines that people, you know, you buy.
You like their, them, right?
They're all right. Okay, so they wrote, they predicted what are going to be the biggest upsets of the Pac-12 season this year. They've got as number two on their list, ASU beats Michigan State. They've got that as their number two biggest upset in 2018. And they cite, in particular, ASU's win over then number five Washington last year as the reason why it can get done. And I'll be honest with you. There has been, and I'm making true story here, there has been so much chaos, perceived or otherwise, around ASU football with Todd Graham and Herb Edwards. I almost forgot they beat Washington last year.
Right.
I almost forgot that Washington was number five in the country when they beat them, and they won 13-7. And then I suddenly remembered that Saturday night watching that game thinking, what am I watching here? How is this happening? How is this possible that ASU is holding this top-ranked team, number five in the country, to this kind of performance?
Well, it's just they've lost seven in a row in Tempe. They've lost 13 out of 14. They were a 17-point favorite, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They don't win in Tempe. They've lost seven games in a row in Tempe and 13 out of 14. It's like kryptonite coming here. They don't play well here.
I had forgotten that win was the highest-ranked team the Sun Devils have beaten since they beat number one Nebraska in 1996. A game that I was lucky enough to be at.
Yeah, Washington was number five in the country. It was the first win versus a top five team since Nebraska. They had lost 10 straight. But ASU's defense, you know, which was, you know, getting clobbered in games going into that, did a really good job in that game.
The other upsets, by the way, the other upsets that they predict, they think Colorado's going to beat both Nebraska and UCLA. That's 5 and 6 on the list.
Colorado.
They've got Colorado beating UCLA and Nebraska.
I don't think UCLA's going to be that good. They're not going to be that good.
I'm kind of with you on that one. Stanford over USC, which I don't think is that big of an upset.
Nope.
UCLA over Arizona. And speaking of predictions, we'll have one about them in just a minute, about the Wildcats.
Not going to happen. They're not going to be able to stop the Khalil Tate kid.
ASU over Michigan State. And
yes.
Then number one, Utah over Washington as their top upset of the Pac-12 season.
Utah's legit. I mean, I could see Colorado. I'm not buying Colorado winning any big games. Washington, I mean, the September 1st against Auburn will tell everything. We'll really know if Washington's legit or not. They got a great senior quarterback in Jake Browning, a great running back in Miles Gaskin, 9 starters back on defense. Their defense finished 8th nationally in yards allowed, Washington's defense. So Washington should be the best team in this conference. I mean, they should be by far the best team in this conference. You know, Utah's got a good squad. As far as ASU beating Michigan State, I just don't see it.
Which one's more likely, Kerron Crump's part of a top five defense or ASU beats Michigan State?
No, it's more likely that ASU beats Michigan State.
Agree.
There's no way that ASU is going to have a top five defense.
I would agree.
They had a couple of the Washington game was, you know, that stood out because they shut down Washington last year. They held them to 7 points. But as far as, you know, what's more likely, it's more likely that they'll win that football game against Michigan State. But again, I think that's highly unlikely, too. The Spartans should be very good this year.
About a week ago, Herm Edwards was asked about the defense's numbers from a year ago.
It's improved over the years, but we got to improve more. But there's some numbers that are very scary. That kind of like, oh. And they saw those numbers. I told them the numbers the last 3 years. I'm not pretty. I think sometimes they know, well, we're not very good, but when you see the numbers, it's like, here's the numbers, guys. And we got to improve on that. And they know that, and they want to do that. So it's a work in progress, but I like the way we're trying to do things.
So numbers were bad the last few years. We went from that to a top five defense. I mean, I understand you have confidence in yourself and your unit. You want to express that confidence. You want to set the bar real high. But we've seen enough out of this defense the last few years that unless Danny Gonzalez is going to walk on water, Danny Gonzalez is going to walk on the Tempe Town Lake at the same time. We'll see if he can turn that unit into a top five nationally defense, top 10 nationally defense. That would be quite a miracle.
I got him top five in the Pac-12 South. I'm telling you, I've got it.
U of A, meanwhile, what did I see? Somebody else had him in the top 25?
Wilner.
John Wilner, who is a very dialed-in Pac-12 insider for the San Jose Mercury News. He has them in his preseason top 25.
Yeah, listen, there's part of me that wants to buy into U of A because I do, you know, and the Khalil Tate kid is amazing, okay? He's amazing, and I understand all the hype with him and what he did against Colorado last year with the 327 rushing yards in one game, set an FBS record. That's amazing. And I understand the defense and how bad the defense was. The defense gave up 471 yards a game last year. It gave up 34 points a game. The secondary is like one of the worst in the whole country. So I get it. But I just keep looking at one thing. Tony Fields, the linebacker, was a true freshman. Collins School, the other linebacker, he was a true freshman. Like, you know, they were just so young across the board. That doesn't mean that, you know, a year later they get better. I think part of the reason they took their lumps was that they decided, sure, Rich Rods decided to go with all these young freshmen and true freshmen last year. So the hope is that those guys, because there's talent there. I mean, they've got, you know, Lorenzo Burns had 5 interceptions. Jace Whitaker had 3. Demetrius Flanagan had 3. So they gave up a lot of big plays. They also picked off a lot of passes.
But as you hinted a second ago, that's what makes any predictions about U of A so tough. Were they bad last year because they were young, or were they bad because they were bad? You know, and I know. One extra year in the system really be the difference between that unit turning it around and being great all of a sudden. You counting on youth. It's a risky proposition, man. It really is, because you don't know for sure if they're all going to make that leap and if they're all going to put you in a position. But it is interesting to see.
Can run like they can, like Khalil Tate and that J.J. Taylor. That kid's, he's so little, but they're, and if they can run the ball and keep their defense fresh, I mean, maybe they've got a shot to be good.
Josh Rosen has been praised for the way that he has handled himself ever since becoming a member of the Arizona Cardinal, but that has not stopped some to continue to doubt the rookie quarterback, and we got a big heap and helping of doubt. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.